internet, guys, gals, and everything in between. Welcome to another episode of For Real Though. I'm Tyler Mitchell, and sitting to my immediate left, as always, is my good friend, Tyler Berry.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, but you can't dodge Art.
Because his name was Art Dodge?
Yeah.
The Artful Dodger?
Did you like that one?
No, I didn't.
God.
You're going to get me at some point.
I know.
For those of you who are just joining us, this podcast is a rumination on movies that feel as if they exist outside the realm of reality for numerous reasons. Perhaps it stars Hollywood A-listers in a film that was clearly beneath them at that point in time. Perhaps it is a major studio release with a plot so nonsensical it feels like a parody on a sketch comedy show. But for whatever the reason, these movies make us sit back, reflect, and say,
For real though?
On this episode, we are talking about the 1995 film Too Much.
Oh man, was this too much.
Two as in T-O-O. It is two as in the number two.
And two as in 2 hours long.
Yeah. It stars Antonio Banderas, Melanie Griffith, and Daryl Hannah. It was directed by the Madrid-born Fernando Trueba, a man known for many things. He is a book editor, screenwriter, director, and music producer.
And an Oscar winner.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. He has won many international awards for his filmmaking. He's also won 2 Grammys and 4 Latin Grammys for his music producing.
Awesome.
He has directed films in Spanish, English, and French. He got to make this movie after winning the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film in 1994. And you can tell he became a lauded director by directing dramas and erotic thrillers and period pieces because he has no basic understanding of how to shoot comedy at all. He co-wrote this screenplay with his brother David, who has also written and directed many Spanish language films himself. The succinct plot summary for Too Much goes as follows. A young gallerist is in love with 2 sisters at the same time. In order to solve the problem, he decides to invent his own twin brother.
Which, like, already that's wrong.
It's wrong, because he's not in love with one of them.
No. Okay, anyway.
Anyways, before we jump in, here are a couple of notes. This film was a multinational production with 5 different production companies pitching in from America, the United Kingdom, Spain, and Canada. So it is very multinational.
Yeah.
It was distributed in the United States by Buena Vista, obviously owned by Disney. And it was distributed around the world by MGM, obviously before they went bankrupt and were sold off in bits and pieces. It's based on a novel by infamous crime writer Donald E. Westlake, who was the winner of 3 Edgar Awards. The Edgar Awards are an awesome award ceremony for mystery-based entertainment of all types. It's named after Edgar Allan Poe. He won an Edgar Award in 3 different categories, 1 for best novel, 1 for best short story, and 1 for best motion picture screenplay. He was also named a Grand Master by the Mystery Writers of America, which is sort of like a Lifetime Achievement Award. He wrote over 100 novels,
wow,
as well as many screenplays over his lifetime. This particular novel has been adapted into a French language movie in 1984, this English language movie in 1995, as well as a Tamil language movie in 1998. And Tamil is a popular Indian dialect. As we already mentioned, this film has heavy hitters like Antonio Banderas, Melanie Griffith, and Daryl Hannah, but it also has a pretty stellar supporting cast of actors that I really like the always funny Joan Cusack, Danny Aiello's in it, and Eli Wallach.
Yep.
He's pretty famous. He's in every spaghetti western.
A million things, yeah.
And as he got older...
The Holiday.
He's in The Holiday and Studio 60. He has a ton of acting credits.
Yeah.
Antonio Banderas got nominated for Best Actor at the Goya Awards.
This is mind-blowing that anyone got nominated for Best Anything with this movie.
So, the Goya Awards are the Academy Awards of Spain, basically. And, I mean, he was good in it. The problem with this movie is not Antonio Banderas, but I'm not sure if that was a down year or what, because Best Actor is mind-boggling.
Pretty ridiculous, yeah.
Antonio Banderas and Melanie Griffith basically fell in love while shooting this movie and got married in 1996,
yeah,
which is funny.
That marriage was doomed from the jump.
Because, I mean, they're divorced.
Based on this
movie. It lasted
movie.
9 years, though, which is pretty good. It lasted longer than their marriage in this movie.
It's a pretty good... Well, I mean, it wasn't existent. They didn't even get married.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The budget for this movie was $24 million, and the overall box office gross was $1.14
million. Woo!
So, pretty good return on the investment there.
2% ROI, baby. 2% ROI. I'd get fired for that shit if I made a marketing campaign that got 2% ROI.
I'm pretty sure they were all very happy that they mitigated the production costs across 5 different companies.
Yep.
So the losses weren't that heavy for everyone. If it was one production company front of the bill, they'd be pissed.
Yep.
Both Melanie Griffith and Daryl Hannah received Golden Raspberry Award nominations for their portrayals in this movie, one as Worst Actress and the other as Worst Supporting Actress,
mm-hmm.
respectively.
They both lost.
And see, that seems a little mean. They weren't horrible. It's not like they were bad. They weren't overacting or under. They were just
it. None of the actors were at fault here.
No, it's not. It was actually, for what it was, pretty well acted.
Yeah.
The actors were not the problem.
No.
So I'm kind of mad that they were the ones that kind of got the brunt of it for this.
Yeah.
This film got pretty abysmal reviews upon release. At least the ones we can find on the internet are not positive.
There aren't too many of them out there.
It's hard taking the Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter score into account, which is something I never try to do anyways because I don't care. I take the average review rating for what it is on there.
Sure.
But this movie only has 7 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. The average review rating is 3.6 out of 10, which...
pretty good.
Pretty, I mean, it's basically on the nose. This is not the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's certainly bad.
It's getting up there, though. Like, it's not Strange Wilderness.
Exactly. I'm going to say that we have seen worse movies. It basically equates to a 2 out of 5 for simple reference.
Yeah.
For example, there were reviews from notable film critics like Roger Ebert and James Bertinelli that they both gave the film a 1.5 out of 4.
Mm-hmm.
And Entertainment Weekly gave it a D-. Just as we do for every episode of this show, we're going to go through the IMDb plot keywords. The IMDb plot keywords can be added by any anonymous free member of IMDb, so they're
including
always
including you.
Yep. Get in there. Mess around. There are 16 plot keywords for Too Much. They are fictional twin, sister-sister relationship,
yeah.
Painting.
Yeah.
Heiress, father-son relationship, disguise, remake of French film, based on novel, wedding, poker game, Miami, Florida, funeral crasher, ex-husband, ex-wife relationship, art gallery, screwball, and my favorite, number in title.
Sure.
Cool.
A lot of people searching for that one.
And the last thing before we jump on in is this movie is very hard to find.
Yeah, I actually had a really cool idea while I was watching this movie, because chances are, if you're listening to this episode, maybe you haven't seen this movie, because
you've probably never heard of it.
It's not available on any streaming service that I could find. I'm sure you could download it illegally from someplace if you wanted to, but maybe you'd even have a hard time doing that.
Why would someone rip this and torrent it if no one cares?
I bought a copy for the purposes of doing this podcast with Tyler, and so that being said, if you listen to this and have any desire to actually watch this movie, I am down to implement a sort of pay it forward service with this film. Like, if you get in contact with me and say, hey, Tyler, I want to watch this movie, I will send it to you, cover the shipping costs, with the caveat that if someone hits you up and says they want to watch this movie, that you do the same.
I mean, this movie is distributed in the United States by Buena Vista, which means Walt Disney owns it.
Right.
And the DVD has been out of print since 2003, from what I can gather.
I think I paid like $22 for this movie.
Yeah, if you want to buy a new one, it'll cost you $45 on DVD.
And that's if it's in your reach.
Region. You gotta make sure it's in the right region.
Yeah.
There is a Blu-ray, but it's not our region.
It's a Spanish region import.
Which isn't surprising because the director is from Madrid. it won't play on your Blu-ray player.
So I'll remind you at the end of the show, but if you want to hit me up, I'd be happy to send this movie to you, because I'm never going to watch it again.
I wonder if the fact that it was funded by so many different production companies, that the rights are...
There's
just
some hang-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, especially for something like streaming. In 1995, they weren't thinking about streaming rights.
No, that's very possible.
Not that this movie was popular upon release, has become popular since.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, we're not even going to worry about it. Why would we put this up? But that's all the background you need to know. I mean, maybe one of you has seen this. I don't know how you would have, but...
I've talked to a few people since we decided that this was going to be on our list. Not one of them had ever even heard of it.
Yeah.
Before I stumbled upon the trailer.
So I guess we'll just dive in knowing that none of you have seen this movie.
Yeah, I mean, we won't go scene by scene or anything.
No.
But I guess, you know, getting a little bit deeper into the actual synopsis for this movie, Antonio Banderas plays a struggling art gallery director who basically doubles as a con man as part of the way he tries to make his business is through tricking widows and widowers who have just lost their significant others into thinking that said significant other who is no longer with us had just purchased a painting from Art Dodge's gallery, which is called Art's Gallery, just by the way. I thought you'd want to know that. So yeah, he starts off as just kind of a piece of garbage. Like, that's just a really crappy thing to do to these. He's just preying on old people. Like, there's literally a sequence where he's sitting in a bar reading the obituaries looking for more marks.
See, but at least that's an interesting character.
Yeah.
Like,
and then it just
goes away.
And
we don't
thing.
See that anymore.
10 minutes into the movie, it's done.
I was like, oh, as far as a setup for a character goes, this art gallery owner who ends up being a con man is fleecing old ladies through charm to get them to pay for paintings that their husbands didn't actually buy before they died.
Right.
Like, at least that's unique. I wonder if that is a big part of the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
because it's written by a crime writer? That would make sense.
He was famous for writing, like, comic capers. So it seems like it could be a comedic work.
Yeah, so essentially that's how the movie starts off. We get introduced to Joan Cusack, who apparently in the 90s just had an affinity for playing criminals' assistants, because a couple years after this, she was opposite her brother as his assistant in Gross Point Blank, a movie that is near and dear to my heart.
I know you like John Cusack.
I'm a big John Cusack fan.
He's fine.
Yeah, so barely 10 minutes into the movie, we get to the first sort of setup for the rest of this film, which is the meet-cute between Art Dodge and Melanie Griffith's Betty, which is one of the weirdest and just, like, most abruptly bizarre meet-cutes that I've ever witnessed, which is Art Dodge pulls up to this giant house where there's a funeral... what do you call it? A wake being held, about to pull his con. And Melanie Griffith's character just crashes a car into the back of his car.
Cool.
And goes, oops, and then gets out and proceeds to walk to the house. And you and I are just sitting there looking at each other like, wait, what?
He, like, looks at the car and is like...
okay. And then he just walks and meets her at the door. I'm like,
yeah.
What is happening? And there's no mention of it ever again.
Nope. Why would there be? That would make sense. This movie doesn't make sense.
It's so weird. So essentially he tries to dupe the wrong people. It turns out that the person who had died that he's trying to say bought a painting from him is the father of a mobster played by Danny Aiello, a mobster named Gene. Gene and his henchmen are all about beating the shit out of Art to teach him a lesson. Art is able to escape and hides in the backseat of the aforementioned Betty's car. It's revealed that Betty and Gene are divorced. They have been married twice. And what am I looking at here?
You are looking at the book that it was based on is free for Amazon Prime owners.
Hell yeah, I'm reading the shit.
It's on your Kindle.
Shit.
You get it. You can rent them. You can rent Donald Westlake's Too Much.
Oh, dude, I can listen to it with my audiobook.
There you go.
You know, I'm not going to do
that. 240 pages. Here.
That's a pretty short book.
Let's see what this says. I want to see if it's different. So this book was written in... Oh, man, where did it go? Where's Too Much? 1975 is when this book was written. And this is the synopsis of the actual book that this movie is based on. And the tagline is, "A ruse to bed a pair of twins quickly grows complicated." So it's already great.
Mm-hmm.
Art doesn't mean to tell Liz Kerwin that he has a twin. He's on Fire Island, and she's so beautiful that he's willing to say anything for a chance at getting rid of her clothes. So when Liz mentions an identical twin sister, Art blurts out that he is a twin, too. His name is Bart, he says, and describes the most boring man he can dream up. Liz thinks he would be perfect for her sister, Betty. When Art meets Betty, who is, of course, just as lovely as her twin, she asks about his brother. Hoping for a chance at the family fortune, Art dons a pair of glasses, slicks back his hair, and soon has Bart engaged to the sister. As his simple lie, spins out of control, Art learns that wooing sisters is never as easy as it seems.
Or maybe he should learn that you just, like, shouldn't
do that.
Sorry, yeah.
I had to read that.
So,
if you want to read the book, it's on your Kindle.
Yeah, so Art ends up in the back of Betty's car. They hit it off. They end up together at some hotel or something. And, like, this weird sequence happens where he, like, in what, like, starts off as kind of like a sweet moment that you would, like, share with someone that you care about, he, like, plucks an eyelash, like, from her eye and is like, "Here, hold it and, like, make a wish or whatever." And she makes a wish and, like, it kind of, like, the camera blows up
to the
hotel, next floor.
There's, like, a hotel room above them.
Yeah, and this man who at the time
we don't know who he is,
he's waiting for a woman, and he's, like, trying to, he's fumbling with his wedding ring to try to take it off. It falls and lands immediately, directly
in her hand.
In Betty's hand.
It falls off of the deck that is outside his hotel room and rolls and falls into her hand.
Which she, but for some reason, is still holding open.
The eyelash went, and she's just holding her hand out to the sky, because that's what you do.
And she's like, "Hey, I got my wish," or something, and it puts it on Art's finger, and yeah, and we're off. I guess they're getting married. Cool. After a day.
We didn't mention this, but I just have to do it. Because I hate the name Art Dodge, because it's so on the nose about the Artful Dodger.
The Artful Dodger, yeah.
It's like, you couldn't
try a little harder? Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, so that happens. We find out that it's going to be Betty's third marriage, because she was married to Gene, the mobster, Danny Aiello, twice. Cool.
And his character's not going away.
No.
Amazingly, in multiple times throughout this film, his little henchmen show up out of nowhere. They know exactly where Antonio Banderas is.
I swear it feels like his henchmen are in this movie more than Danny Aiello is.
Yeah, and it just kind of drives me a little insane. Every time they show up, there is a music cue that feels it's out of a thriller or an action movie.
Right.
And, like, it changes the motif of the film into, like, oh, Antonio Banderas is hiding from these guys who are trying to kill him multiple times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this doesn't fit in this screwball comedy at all. Maybe if they played it as if it was a comedy, but the music doesn't play it as a comedy, the movie doesn't play it as a comedy.
Right.
It's like they're actually trying to beat him up and he's trying to run away. It's not funny.
So then we get to what is like a very quick moment, but I've been thinking that it's just very weird. There's just paparazzi at this hotel that they're kicking it at.
Oh, yeah.
Because the set, like, we forgot to mention that Betty, I mean, I guess, and her sister, too, are heiresses to some kind of fortune. It's never mentioned once.
We don't even know that she's an heiress to anything until the paparazzi show up.
Yeah. And so the paparazzi show up, and they're like, "Hey, that's Betty, blah, 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 with some guy." And then they take photos, and she's like, "This is my new fiancé." And then Danny Aiello's character sees it in the paper.
Yeah.
Man, this movie just fumbles right from the start. Like, there's just stuff that just doesn't make sense at all.
I need to see my piece on this. The problem with this movie is not the actors. The actors do a pretty good job of trying to sell everything they've got.
Yeah.
The problem with this movie, it comes from the direction and the shot composition and the script. The script is so problematic. It lacks wit and energy. It can't decide if it wants to be a romantic comedy or a screwball comedy. Then sometimes it has the tension of an action movie, and there are just some moments that don't make sense. I don't want to bring up this one because it'll ruin what we're going to talk about in a minute, but like, on the front of the DVD cover, I made a joke about this on Twitter for those of you who follow our thing on Twitter, that the DVD cover says screwball comedy in quotes from the Hollywood Reporter. It doesn't say anything else. It just says screwball comedy.
Yeah.
And like, this movie at times tries to be a screwball comedy, but this movie is not His Girl Friday. It is not Some Like It Hot. It's not even Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, it just doesn't do screwball. There are a couple scenes that do screwball comedy.
And they're not done well,
and they're not
really
done well, but all of that other stuff, there is regular romantic comedy scenes. There are normal comedy scenes, usually with Joan Cusack being witty. That's how that goes.
Joan Cusack, some of Joan Cusack's reaction shots are the best parts of this movie.
And maybe this is because the director is from Spain, and their cinema is obviously different, mm-hmm. has a different style and language than our films do. As I've mentioned many times in our podcast, I like long shots and long takes, so the actors get to act. But I only like that if the composition helps in letting the actors act.
Right.
When I'm getting a medium wide shot with no cuts, and it's just Antonio Banderas walking around, or it's him talking to Joan Cusack or Melanie Griffith, and they're just having a conversation. I'm not close enough to see any of the facial tics. It's just them having a conversation.
Right.
It doesn't play. And it's really problematic throughout the whole movie. And that just, it just keeps coming up and up and up, is that it feels at times like a European movie without the grasp of style. And he's obviously writing in a language that's not his first language, because a bunch of the jokes don't land,
mm-hmm.
and it's all over the place and muddled. I don't know. It's just, this movie is not good.
It's not well done. It's not well done. We fast forward, well, not even really fast forward. It's the next scene. It's like, there's clearly a lot of filler stuff cut out of this movie, because the next sequence is just Antonio Banderas, Art Dodge, is waking up with no memory of where he is. Like, they clearly got super, super drunk, even though at the time... Oh, no, you know what? I guess in the bedroom before he gets the ring, he does say that he's, like, loaded.
So how do they get back to her house?
I don't know. That's my point. There's clearly a lot of shit that... But, like, I was saying that it didn't make sense that he didn't remember, but then
yeah.
he does say that line.
Right,
so.
But we don't know how they got there. He is...
He
wakes up in their mansion.
Yeah.
And we don't know where he is, because we haven't seen it yet. It's presumed that it's her place.
Yeah, and I get... And I hesitate to use the term again because of how not that it is, but I guess our second meet-cute happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's far from cute.
I know, it's pretty cute.
Well, so...
Get some Daryl Hannah butt all up in there.
Art hears the shower running in one of the bathrooms and opens the door to find the steamy outline of a naked woman inside the shower, presumably Betty.
He's presuming it's
and
the woman he just had sex with, so...
In probably the funniest moment, as far as I'm concerned, of the movie...
Most ridiculous, at
he
least.
He starts doing, like, this very, like... It's like that stereotypical music that you would hear during, like, a seductive, like, stripper sequence in a movie.
But is it, though?
I mean, he doesn't do it well.
It's like, when he was doing it, I was
it
like, is he
like
having,
he's
a,
having
stroke?
A stroke?
Like, he's... is he trying... I don't know. He's doing something with his mouth and dancing naked up to the shower. And, like, I feel like we need to pull the audio...
We will.
DVD,
I will.
So that they can hear what it is, because I can't aptly describe what that sound coming out of his mouth was.
I'll rip it before I edit this together, and just I'll insert it right here.
Did you guys laugh?
Yeah, so
I mean,
that was
see
a
what that, was?
That was a real thing that happened in that movie. Just to let you know, like, that is not something that we cobbled together. We're not making this shit up.
Yeah. So it ends up being her sister,
Liz,
played by Daryl Hannah, and she's obviously like, "Can you leave? Get out of the shower?"
Yeah, but she's not like nearly as horrified as any human being would have a right to be.
Shit, man! If it was someone I knew who opened the shower door, I'd be like, "What are you doing?
Get out of
here!
Get
out of the bathroom! This is my time to shower. Leave me alone!"
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Let alone someone who was a complete stranger.
Yeah. We find out that Liz is involved with a married man, which is like it's talked about for one sequence and then it's over.
Yep. She has bad luck with men, apparently.
She immediately hates art, like for no reason whatsoever.
No, I thought she loves art.
Liz hates art right away.
Liz?
Daryl Hannah? Yeah.
I thought she was a big... She liked art, I thought was her thing. Am I wrong?
No, I mean Art Dodge.
Oh. See,
see that's stupid! That is so dumb that that's a thing!
You need to say Antonio Banderas. You're
I'm
confusing
sorry.
Me.
That is so dumb that that's a thing that we have to be confused by while talking about this movie.
You're preaching to the choir.
Oh my god. I didn't even think about bringing that up. Anyway, So she hates Art Dodge. She hates Art Dodge. She thinks he's just like every other skeezball slimy dude that has been trying to get Betty's heiress fortune for however damn long it's been happening. But Antonio Banderas is immediately in love with her. Like, in the way that he's not in love with Betty. There's this really, really bizarre moment where Art Dodge decides to try and take a step back with Betty as she's trying to do all these wedding planning things.
Yeah, they engage after one day, by the way.
Yeah, and she does this just, like, high-pitched screaming thing all the way as she runs up the stairs.
I don't know what that was.
And it's one of the weirdest things I've ever...
Okay, maybe she does deserve a Golden Raspberry nomination, because that was beyond me. I was like... Are we watching a Tim and Eric sketch? What's going on?
Because it's not like she was crying. It's not like she was she was literally just like high-pitched screams, like four high-pitched screams as she runs up the stairs. And you're just like, what? What is happening?
I don't know. I honestly don't.
So
at one point, Danny Aiello calls Antonio Banderas a bimbo.
That's right. I have that written down as well. I'm glad you wrote that down.
Which was weird.
Yeah, that was really weird.
I don't know if I'd call him a bimbo.
Yeah.
Okay. That was... I didn't know what to make of that.
Everything we've talked about at this point, we're in about the 32-minute mark. And the movie kicks off about this time when we are...
Introduced,
I guess, to Bart Dodge.
Who's Bart Dodge?
Well, Tyler, let me tell you. Bart Dodge is Art Dodge's twin brother. A much more artistic, shyer, nerdy...
He wears glasses.
Wears glasses.
He doesn't have his hair up in a ponytail.
He wears his hair down. It's a little bit curly and, like, not, like, super slicked back. He is Art's estranged twin brother who is 12 minutes younger than him.
Yep.
Get it? It's too much because there's two now.
Yeah.
And one of them's name rhymes with the other. Bart is short for Barther, by the way.
So, before this scene happens where he creates Bart...
Barther.
We get two other scenes that are pretty important to the movie. One is
quote-unquote
with...
important.
They are.
I know.
One is with a client of his, Manny, who is an artist. He's supposed to be selling his art, and he hasn't sold anything.
Right.
And this scene is created to show us basically how smooth of a con man Antonio Banderas' character is. But he doesn't seem to be very good at it. Man, he just seems to be basically an idiot.
Yeah.
And that is the end of that. And then at the end of that scene, we are introduced to Eli Wallach's character, who is Antonio Banderas' father. It's kind of weird for me to see him as his father, even though I know Eli Wallach speaks Spanish because of all of the spaghetti westerns he did. Eli Wallach is charming. He apparently has Korsakoff's syndrome, which it's basically, I don't want to say that it's Alzheimer's, but it involves two different types of amnesia and severe memory loss. It has invented memories that the patient creates due to gaps in memory.
Mm-hmm.
There are blackouts. Minimal content and conversation, which means, like, they're not supposed to be talkative.
But he is.
Yeah, he is.
He's very talkative.
I mean, this could be early in Korsakoff's syndrome.
True.
The patient ends up losing interest in things, being really apathetic, and has a lack of insight about their life. And there are moments in the movie where they show him being a little off-kilter and forgetful. So, I don't know. I thought that was a weird character choice. He could have just been a quirky old man instead of giving him a disease that... I think they put that in there to show that he takes care of his father, but it's never played on. They never give us that.
I mean, his father ends up essentially taking care of him.
At certain points. So we needed to mention those two
things.
Before we get into our boy Bart Dodge.
Bart Dodge, Barther.
And I need to say that eventually there's a revelation that Banderas is into the sister way more than he is into his fiance.
Mm-hmm.
Which comes out of nowhere, because there is no chemistry between them or any moment where he shows interest before that. Like, we know that she's big into art, as in artworks, not as in Art Dodge.
Yeah.
She's
intelligent.
Yeah,
she,
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, other than that, he's met her for a total of, like, 2 minutes on screen.
And she was naked and annoyed the entire time.
It's... bizarre.
It's...
I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
So, Liz and Bart end up hitting it off because Bart is, I guess, tailored more toward Liz's interest
in him.
From
what I gather, Bart is actually basically
Bart.
Who he is.
Right. And...
the whole
he's like pretending to be someone he's not in his real self, but then his fake self.
Here's the thing. I don't think he's pretending to be someone else. He doesn't like hanging out with his fiance whatsoever. Like, the time they did hang out was after...
I meant the art thing. Like, because remember he talks about how, like, he's kind of just given up his actual pursuit of being a great artist and things like that.
I get that. The problem with this movie is none of it... it doesn't coalesce into anything.
Nope.
Everything is just thrown out there.
It feels like a lot of just cobbled together scenes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all, God knows if this is if the initial cuts were longer, this movie's already 2 hours.
And it, God,
it
doesn't
drags.
Feel like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, this is
know.
Not one of those comedies that feels like it's over.
I mean, it's trying to be a screwball comedy without anything actually funny ever happening.
Yeah.
So, it feels a screwball drama? Like, what? Screwball lightheartedness?
Who knows, man.
There's the scene where they're all... Bart gets invited to hang out. No, it's Art at this point. Art is hanging out with Liz and Betty at their house. And it's like the phone one.
Oh, so Joan Cusack's Gloria calls the house
on Art Dodge's instruction.
Yeah, to say that basically Bart is calling for Art. Art goes inside to quote unquote make drinks for everyone.
Yep.
Picks up the phone there, talks to Gloria as Art talking to Bart, but then. Basically pretends to still be talking to Bart when he's in front of Liz while the phone in the other room is still off the hook. He's basically using two phones to talk on the same line, which isn't how phones work.
I mean, it could totally work. You can talk to someone on the phone. If you have a landline, you can pretend that you're on the phone.
You're right. I haven't used a landline in a long time.
It's a dumb scene.
But it makes no sense. Because it's like, Liz brings the phone in to him and goes, oh, your brother's on the phone. Would you like to talk to him? And he's like, yeah. Why wouldn't you just say no?
I don't know. It's a movie. They're being stupid. I mean, later there's a scene where it's not...
Should we talk about the drugging?
I was going to get to that one after
this. Oh, okay. Go for it.
There's a scene where it's Bart instead of Art this time, hanging out with the girls. It's the scene where Danny Aiello shows up at her dock.
On the yacht
with the fireworks and the mariachi band.
Yeah.
So Bart / Art / Antonio Banderas he starts to dance with Liz. They're dancing to mariachi music, and the Golden Retriever is there.
Yeah, just randomly.
He plays fetch with him, and the dog the dog likes Antonio Banderas a lot, which is what we're supposed to get out of that. In another scene, where we know that the dog likes him. And that scene, they threw that in there to bring it back later. The way that Liz figures out that Bart is Art and Art is Bart is that the dog likes Bart. I don't remember. It's like so dumb.
That the dog likes Bart.
Right.
And she's like, oh, that's how I figured it out. And on the last episode, it's kind of funny that we've had a couple of these, like, as our first two episodes being like, a woman has to figure out that this person is
tricking them
and she does it in a much less, like, actually intelligent way than Meg Ryan's character does in IQ. Because
mm-hmm.
Meg Ryan's character is a mathematician, and she figures it out through math that this dude is not who he says he is. And Daryl Hannah's character just, like, sees a dog liking a guy. I'm like, okay, Golden Retrievers are some of the sweetest dogs on the planet. Golden Retrievers probably would like anybody if you at least pet them once or twice.
Well, there's the weird scene where, I don't know, the henchmen break into the studio flat where Antonio Banderas is painting, and they beat him up. And Liz ends up finding him there, and he, like,
acts as Bart.
And then he comes clean and saying that he's Art.
And says that he's in love with her.
Wouldn't she be like, just immediately be like, so wait, is your brother a real person, or are you just pretending the whole time? And she doesn't go
there.
She
completely refutes it. She's like, no, you're just trying to do this to get one over on your brother and your fiance. And it's like, wait, what?
Unbelievably flawed.
Oh my God.
It's driving me insane.
Especially considering Liz is supposed to be the smart one of the sisters.
Yeah, it treats the women in this movie like idiots.
Which,
I mean, granted, it treats everyone like an idiot for the most part, so I don't know if that's really sexist.
Can we talk about the date rape scene? I'm being overdramatic,
still bad.
But it's still bad.
Scene.
So, Art and Bart have dinner with the sisters separately. Art has dinner with Betty at 9 o'clock, and then is supposed to have dinner alone with Liz as Bart at 10 o'clock. So, hey, most dinners last longer than an hour, right? Especially when you're with your fiance or your girlfriend. At a nice restaurant. So what does Art do? He puts a date rape drug into Betty's very nice wine so that she's basically just unconscious. So that he can get her home, into bed, slip into a different clothes, and then go out with her sister. Mm-mm-mm.
Yep.
I hate this movie.
It's really bad. There's a scene where he drugs the person, and it's played off as a comedy.
And both you and I are so just, like, not about anything terrible like that we're just like, is this really happening right now?
That's amazing. I was amazed it was actually happening.
And, like, so this, like, sommelier at the restaurant sees this, and it's 1994, so his reaction is, oh, mon Dieu, like, how could you ruin a nice wine like that? And he's like, well, it's the only way I can get my wife to take her medicine. I don't care who you are. If you see that in 2017, you're calling the fucking police immediately.
It was bad.
This movie. That
scene was bad. The subplot where the Daniel's henchmen they keep coming up. But
they keep chasing Art.
It's stupid, but it leads to my...
And they keep chasing Art even though it's revealed that Gene, Danny Aiello, wants Art to marry Betty to make her happy?
I don't know.
Which doesn't make any sense.
The script sucks. I know, it's dumb. That's not what we're getting into right now. It leads to my favorite characters because they follow Art to his dad's house.
Oh, yes.
Where Eli Wallach is having a poker game with some of his buddies. And these guys have, like, some of the best bits in the movie when they're... Eventually, they try to outrun the henchmen in a car. It's just... They have little throwaway gags that make me laugh.
Yeah.
But there's three buddies, and it includes the actor Phil Leeds, who... He had a 5-decade-long career. He had over 116 acting credits.
Wow.
He was in a ton of things like ER and Night Court and Everybody Loves Raymond and Roseanne and Ally McBeal. I mean, I know him. He was in 3 Boy Meets World episodes,
mm-hmm.
and I think he's hilarious. And he was really funny in this movie. Like, when I wanted a movie about Eli Wallach and his three friends just being old men goofing around is what I wanted when that happened.
Another trend I feel like we've repeated in these first 2 episodes, because it's like, I wanted a movie of Albert Einstein and his 3 scientist friends.
Like, they're the most interesting characters in the movie, and everyone else kind of sucks.
Yep.
And, I mean, do you want to get into this... The end of this movie.
I mean, because you've got a meeting in an hour. So,
what do you think is going to happen, guys? What do you think?
We'll wait for a second.
Take a good long think and guess. Antonio Banderas is going to end up with Daryl Hannah, and
did you guess that there's going to be a really long sequence at the wedding where everything comes to a head and it's all revealed, and also. Antonio Banderas does that typical two-person, one-person conversation that's benefited by an obstructed view thing. Yeah? Did you say that? Because that happens, and it's awful.
It's not good. So, yeah, they end up together. Betty ends up with Danny Aiello, of course, which is hinted out throughout the whole movie, which was not surprising.
Nope.
The dumbest moment of the movie happens where the psychiatrist gets his ring back. So the guy who dropped the ring from the hotel room at the beginning of the movie ends up being the psychiatrist of Betty.
Right.
So he's at the wedding. The ring gets dropped on the ground. He picks it up.
He's also clearly in love with Betty.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyways, so he picks up the ring and he's like, I wonder what Freud would have made of this. He's like, I don't know. He probably wouldn't have thought anything of it. I don't understand.
I can't. This was... Remember how we told you guys on the last episode, on our pilot episode, that we aren't actively seeking to do a podcast that's just bashing bad movies? This movie sucks. I'm sorry.
It's really bad.
It's bad. And we promise it's not going to be every episode, but this movie is comically bad.
Mm-hmm.
Comically bad.
Like, there's the moment where Antonio Banderas tells Daryl Hannah that he's always loved her. I'm like, what? You've known her for like 11 days. 12 days, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
There are like weird actual romantic scenes in the movie, but it's not a romantic movie. It's a screwball comedy. No, it's a bad screwball comedy, but it is that. Or
yeah.
Trying to be. And we get these moments that don't fit with the movie.
Mm-mm.
It drives me insane. This movie was not...
It legitimately drove us to start drinking an hour through. I wasn't planning on drinking before we recorded this podcast, but we got to a point where we were both just like, I can't.
I need a glass of wine.
I started drinking beer. I was like, I can't with this. I can't.
I'll tell you what, though, that Antonio Banderas, 1, beautiful man.
Caliente.
Very attractive man. 2, pretty good at physical comedy.
Yeah, I mean, even though it dragged on too long and it wasn't really that funny. The sequence where he's running back and forth between Betty and Liz's bathroom, he does a really good job of selling it.
That wasn't the one that got me. The one that I thought was hilarious was he jumps out of the window onto a palm tree and he like is falling while hanging on the palm tree. And you see him, and we're inside the house with Daryl Hannah and she's setting something up and he's in the background. You see him flailing behind the window. And eventually he drops and like twists his ankle so he's hopping.
And then he falls in the pool
and it's like,
that was
he did a really good job of doing that.
Oh, yeah. Talk about the really weird physical comedy moment. When Betty first comes to the gallery to talk to... She's there to see Art, but Bart's there. talks to Bart. Bart walks out and then does this like weird ass Tom Cruise Mission Impossible,
yeah,
like ducking down and like all so that he can get into this thrift store whose window faces the window of the gallery,
yeah,
so that he can buy a shirt that Art would wear so that he can go back to the gallery to be Art.
It's about to happen.
It's about to happen on we play the movies like while we're doing these podcasts. And that moment is actually about to happen right now.
I mean, the whole thing is Betty comes to see him to see Art.
Yeah.
He pretends to be Bart because he's wearing a shirt that Bart would wear. So he says, all right, I'm leaving. Art should be coming in soon, though, so why don't you wait for him? So then, as soon as he walks out, he's not even out of view of her because his whole store is windows. So she could probably see him doing this.
I mean, he's never out of view of her because he literally is looking into the art gallery from the thrift shop.
Well, right. So, like, he leaves his own store and then crouches down on the ground and tries to, like, he's doing a weird army walk crawl thing to the thrift store. And everyone's just looking at him, and it is utterly bizarre.
Of all the moments in this movie, there are so many bad moments. I can't even call it bad. This is just out of left field bizarre.
I don't know if something was lost in translation. Like, I had obviously never seen any of Fernando Trueba's movies. He's pretty lauded for his film, and
I believe that he's good at what he does, but this isn't it.
No. I don't know. Maybe if he had directed a script he didn't write himself by someone whose first language is English,
yeah,
it would have been different. But, oof.
This movie, man. Yeah.
I don't know. I was indifferent towards IQ. I didn't think IQ was horrible. This movie is bad.
Bad.
It's a bad movie.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that'll wrap it up, right?
That's going to do it for us. I mean, unless you got more you want to say about this movie.
No, I'll say what I said earlier. Like, if you guys want to watch this movie, I will seriously start a pay it forward.
Never going to find it cheaper.
No, seriously. I mean, $3 to ship it, parcel post or whatever. I'll ship it to you. You just ship it to the next person.
I feel like watching it, I don't regret watching it because it was just like so.
I don't think
what?
We're doing this for the purposes of creating media. I don't think I'm ever going to regret watching a movie for this show. I would regret watching this if I wasn't doing it to do something.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like watching it, it's such a weird curiosity that even though it's horrible, it's worth a watch just to see how horrible it is. Like, it is so bizarre.
And what it came out of. It came out of major studios, major distribution studios, major actors, even major supporting actors.
The weirdest thing about this all is that it's based on a book with a terrible plot, and that book has been adapted 3 different times.
In 3 different...
Languages.
Languages. 3 different, like, cultures, essentially.
That's... I don't...
It's bizarre.
It's crazy.
It's
whole
bizarre.
Thing is crazy.
Everything about this is bizarre.
Yeah, and calling it too much with a W makes me mad,
oh,
too.
Oh, boy.
It's a bad pun.
That was a... Yeah. This movie was doomed from the jump.
Pretty much, yeah.
Let's be honest.
Well,
cool, man.
That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. Leave us a rating on iTunes, comment on iTunes, subscribe, get in touch with us at flyoverstate.org. You can check out all of our social medias, listen to our other podcasts, My Consumerist Week with Tyler and Tyler, and Last Pod Standing.
You almost forgot the name of our show, didn't you?
No, I was going to say Last Band Standing,
and then I
corrected myself. Last Pod Standing, those are all up on iTunes as well. We're going to be doing another For Real Though in a couple of weeks. Be on the lookout for that.
Mm-hmm. And like we said last time, if you've got suggestions for movies you think would fit into these categories that we're trying to do, hit us up.
All right.
Cool.
Cool.
Love you.
Adios.